Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio.
Live.
This is the Gus Bradley Show.
Gus Bradley Show.
Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley and former Jaguar Jeff Loggeman are brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank. The Gus Bradley Show begins right now.
Well, it's actually the David Caldwell Show because Gus Bradley's got the night off this evening, and we welcome in the general manager, Dave Caldwell. Good evening, Dave.
Good evening. I'd love to say he has the night off. I wish he had the night
off. Well, he's kind of got the night off from this.
Sure.
But he's working. Obviously, yeah. The search for the offensive coordinator continues along. And how is that process going, and how involved are you?
It's going very well. Gus is... you know, he's heading the search, obviously, and it's his, you know, as a head coach of the franchise, I think you want that responsibility to lie with him. He spends a lot of time in my office kicking ideas and different things. What I try to do is do any vetting or background on some of these guys.
Now, explain what vetting means, because a lot of people say, what do you mean by vetting?
Yeah, just talking to a guy that knows a guy that knows a guy that's
right.
Worked with them, and just trying to find out, A, are they cultural fit? Are they competent? And B, generally, you know, you're interviewing good coaches, but we want the best. And, you know, Shad Khan said, well, you know what? We have an opening, so let's go find the best and do whatever we can to find the best coach to come in here and take us to the next level. So that's what we're doing. We're going to take our time. We're going to be patient. And so I just want to make sure that we undercover anything we don't know about any potential candidates. And I give Gus that information. And a lot of times it's about putting the pieces to the puzzle together.
How challenging is this, filling one position, offensive coordinator, when you have six, basically, head coach openings in the National Football League, and you have a couple other teams that have offensive coordinator openings as well?
It's pretty challenging, and it's a situation where, you know, the dominoes will start to fall here shortly when head coaches get their jobs, and guys that are up for those jobs will have their wish list of coordinators that they want. Some of the potential coordinators that we're looking at are, you know, potential coordinators elsewhere. So we just have to wait to see kind of how the dominoes fall. And there are some attractive jobs out there. We feel ours is just as attractive as any. We got a great head coach. We got a great owner. We got a great city. And we got a lot of young talent on offense. And we got a ton of salary cap room. We'll do whatever we need to do to upgrade the talent, both offensively and defensively. And another draft, and a young quarterback that I think we all feel good about.
And we're going to have a conversation, obviously, about Blake Bortles. When it comes to an offensive coordinator, contractually, you know, coaches want security.
Sure.
If a guy goes and takes a job with a new head coach, and that head coach gets a 5-year deal, that's security.
Sure.
Is the security equal for the offensive coordinator position here as it may be somewhere else?
Yeah, I believe so. And I think Coach Bradley is very secure in his job and moving forward. And we knew what we were in for when we took this team over. I think Shad Khan, our owner, was aware of where we were and what the process was going to be and how long it was going to take. And Coach Bradley, the one thing you can say about our team is they play hard. And not, as you know, Jeff, as a former player, that's not the case always
No.
across the league. And so I know we've done some really good things that, you know, from a coaching standpoint, in terms of our penalties, in terms of our turnovers, our, you know, fewest in the league in both those areas. Fumbles. And then, you know, the way they play and guys play hard up until the last minute of the last game of the season. And that's not the case for a 3-13 football team either. So once we get the talent level to where it needs to be here and the coaching level, the level of talent with the coaching staff too, where it needs to be, I think this will, Gus and whoever comes as coordinator will be here for a long haul. And hopefully when they leave, it's to take a head coaching job somewhere else.
I think just to kind of echo what you said there, the game at Baltimore where, you know, the first possession, you go to punt, and all of a sudden you got a block punt for a touchdown. There, a lot of teams in that situation with the record as was it was, probably would have just stopped playing.
That's right.
And your football team did not. And I gave them a lot of credit for it at that point, because I remember in the broadcast saying, uh-oh, you know, because it could have gotten ugly, but
yep.
It didn't.
No, it didn't. And I think the biggest thing with that is a year ago, if that happened to us, which it did, you saw the difference. And now that our talent level is starting to get to an acceptable level, they're keeping us in games coupled with the ability to play hard.
All right. An offensive coordinator, obviously, the smart ones want to go into a situation that they feel very strongly about having success. I mean, mm-hmm. The great coaches seem to have a knack for saying, this is attractive because these are the parts in place. And the key part that is obviously your quarterback, Blake Bortles, and you had mentioned him earlier. Evaluate his first year.
Well, it's kind of like a roller coaster, you know, a lot of ups and downs, and it kind of finished what we thought, you know, strong at the end and fast at the end. I think for Blake was when we first initially drafted him, we had the thoughts of not playing him at all.
Now, whose thoughts were that? Was that your thoughts? Was that Gus's thought?
I think collectively as an organization, we felt like, you know, there was no need to rush him. And we know that why we're doing this, and this is for a long haul. We want to make a run, and a significant run, and to build it the right way, it's going to take a little bit of time. We're trying to speed that process up because we're all getting impatient. Our fan base is getting impatient. I'm getting impatient. Coach Bradley's getting impatient.
I'm impatient.
You're getting impatient. But and we understand that, and it's frustrating. But we just try to look at the big picture and to see where – we didn't want to ruin him from a, you know, you see young quarterbacks that come in and have.
Now, let me just pause you right there just for a minute because I want to ask a question that specifically relates to that. Uh-huh. Are you of the mindset that believes, because me and Gus had this conversation at one time, are you of the mindset that playing somebody too early can change the outcome? Or are you of the mind that says, look, if it's going to happen, it happens eventually anyway. And it doesn't matter how the guy is treated early on, and that there are certain quarterbacks or personalities that can't get ruined.
I think it's on an individual basis. So I'm going to toe the middle line between your and Gus's argument. I think it's on a case-by-case basis.
Okay, because I'm of the belief that, look, either the guy has got it, the mental makeup to be able to make through the hard times, or he doesn't.
Right.
And you're in the middle.
I'm in the middle. I think it's dependent on the guy and dependent on the situation. I've seen, you know, good prospects. And there is a nature versus nurture aspect to the NFL. And, you know, you can make the absolutely right pick on draft day or sign the right free agent. But if you don't work to make that decision work, it's going to have a hard time coming out with a positive outcome.
So what you're saying is it depends on whether you pick the guy or not.
No, it depends on whether, yeah.
Just having fun with you.
But I think it's really, you have to work to make your decisions work. And sometimes it's about making difficult decisions and maybe some unpopular decisions. And with Blake, we found out really early that he's got the mental toughness to handle adversity.
Yeah, and it's clear that he's got that.
Yeah.
And if you had to say the one thing that may have surprised you about him that you didn't think would show so early, what would that be?
I thought early on his accuracy was very, very good. I think he was completing close to 70% of his passes.
Yeah, San Diego game right out of the gate.
Yeah, and for a young quarterback to do that, and he was making some tough throws, and then his athleticism is even – we knew he was athletic, and we knew he could make off-schedule plays, but the way it transitioned to this level was even more impressive.
Yeah, some of the plays that he made, particularly early on, whether it been the San Diego game, the one throw that he made to Clay Harbor, I mean, boy, how do you draw plays up like that for a young quarterback? But most of the successful quarterbacks you watch, like a Peyton Manning and you watch Tom Brady, does the routine need to start becoming routine for a Blake Bortles, the routine throws?
Yeah, and I think it will. I think it's a matter of it. We always talk about the game slowing down for him and for him to realize that, hey, you know what? I don't have to rush this throw. I can set my feet. I can make the throw. You know, there is no pressure there. There is no threat of a blitz or whatever it might be, and where he starts to see the big picture. And once he does that, some of the routine, you know, where you saw some inconsistency throughout the year and some of the short throws and some of that stuff, I think those will become second nature. We know he can make the difficult throws, and I think it's just putting the whole piece, the whole puzzle together for him.
And how much of that making the routine is mechanics versus just understanding an offense and understanding the NFL defenses?
I think the majority of it is the understanding of the offense and defense, and because when you have that, you don't, your mechanics won't go into duress. And you know where to go, and you can have patience.
And so you feel that young Blake Bortles is an attractive option for an offensive coordinator in this search?
I do. Yeah. I do, yeah. And with any job, too, you know, when you're looking for – when there are openings, there's a reason why there's openings. And it's probably because the person that just got fired may not have – you know, all the teams have holes and have some issues. So it's just what's more attractive to you. And, you know, our vision has been consistent and our plan's been consistent. And I think anybody would see kind of what we're doing that would look at our team.
Do you have any regrets with him playing so early, you from a general manager perspective?
No, I think it worked out really well. I regret that, you know, he got his hit as much as he did. But I think he handled it well. I think he learned, you know, some of the mistakes he made early with the interceptions. You know, he took good care of the ball the second half of the season, really cut down those interceptions, but still was aggressive with the ball.
And one thing that I thought was impressive about him throughout the years, when you start to talk to his teammates about him, they talk in glowing terms, and they talk about how cool and calm and how he commands the huddle. Is that something that you measured or could actually get an opinion on when he was at Central Florida?
Yeah, well, what we always noticed was the drive after he made a mistake, he came back and had a positive, whether it was a positive play or was a positive drive or that ended in a touchdown, threw an interception, and you look at the bowl game, threw an interception, came back, won the game for him. I think it was a Louisville game. It's all starting to run together now. It's been so long.
After all the game film you've watched, I'm sure.
Yeah, and the Louisville game, Penn State game, you know, threw an interception, came back, won the game for him. For us here, you know, New York Giants, you know, we're struggling. Gets the ball with 2 minutes to go, you know, puts it on his shoulders and said, you know what, I'm not going to leave a doubt here. Tennessee, our first game, you know, we're down by 10 with 2.5 minutes to go, brings us back in position to win the game. We missed a field goal, obviously. But whenever he's had a situation where he could bring us back to win a game, he's done that. Cincinnati brought us back within 3, and then unfortunately our defense gave up a touchdown. So he's done that, and, you know, 80% of these games are won and lost in the last 2 minutes of the fourth quarter. So we know he can excel in those 2 minutes.
All right, well, at some point here on the David Caldwell Show, which we're calling it today,
it's perfect.
I'm going to ask you for some awards, okay, and just to throw out some categories so you can maybe think about this in your mind here.
Best announcer,
point.
You or Tony Baselli?
What?
Best announcer, you or Tony?
Yeah,
Baselli?
Yeah. You can throw your hat into that ring too.
All right.
But some of the ones, one of them category, the personnel person of the year in your staff. Okay, maybe a guy that helped you uncover somebody that you're excited about. Assistant coach of the year is another category. Leadership award, the lunch pail award, the hardest working guy on your roster, the most improved player, the Rookie of the Year, and the Team MVP. And I'm going to let you kind of ponder that while we take a break here right on the Dave, right here on the Dave Caldwell Show. I guess we're going to call it the Dave Caldwell Show, and we'll be back right after this on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And this portion of the Dave Caldwell Show is brought to you by Beards Jewelry at the St. John's Town Center, where exceptional is affordable. And here with the general manager, and we talked about the offensive coordinator search, and obviously you guys probably want to remain pretty tight-lipped about that because there's so many openings around the National Football League. And I guess you don't want to even play your hand, just like free agency or the draft, right?
Yeah, and it's really not fair to the candidates either, and plus their teams that they work for. So we don't want to create any, you know, some of the candidates might still be playing on teams, and we don't want to create any distractions for them as their season's still going on.
Last question as it relates to that. How important is it for that person who is going to be named the offensive coordinator to have had or the belief that he has a great talent in developing a young quarterback?
Well, it's twofold. One is there's very few offensive coordinators that are offensive coordinators / quarterback coaches. So, you know, a lot of development comes with a quarterback coach too. And so those are some of the things we have to weigh in. And same with, like, there's offensive coordinators that are offensive line background and they're offensive coordinators. There's offensive coordinators that are tight end driven and then they're offensive coordinators. There's some that have a background as a running back, so they know the running game really well and they know protections and then there's a quarterback, but there's very few combo quarterback / offensive coordinators. So if that person that we may or may not hire doesn't have that background, not to say he can't do it, but we may have to add, or, you know, Frank Seifel really needs to step up the plate for us this year.
Okay, all right. We're going to get to, as I talked about before the break there, we're going to get to all the awards that we're going to throw out here. And we added one category, the best unrestricted free agent acquisition that you had this past year. We'll add that to that category here at the bottom of the hour. In the National Football League, along with these head coaching openings, there are general manager position openings. And I don't know the exact number on that. Do you?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't.
But there are some openings, and there are some that are perceived to be open.
Sure.
But aren't necessarily open yet. With some of these openings, one of your guys, Chris Polian, who is your pro personnel director, is supposedly in Philadelphia or going to be interviewing with the Philadelphia Eagles. And you guys, I guess, had to give permission for him to go interview for that?
Sure. Yeah, with the NFL, you know, the rules are, if it's for a general manager's position or a head coaching position, it's more of a notification that you can't block it. Unless it's not for, you know, sometimes people can give you titles as general manager, but that's not really general manager duties. And at that point in time, you could potentially decline it. Now, philosophically, you know, from a leadership standpoint, I don't believe
how could you do that?
Yeah, ever holding somebody back from a great opportunity. And as long as they work hard and they do it the right way and they attain their goals by, you know, doing the best job they can do here, I'll be the first to promote those guys.
And how important is it, and obviously you want Chris to get the opportunity if he has that opportunity.
Sure.
But how much would that hurt by not having a guy that you've worked with for a very long time?
Yeah, it would hurt. But, you know, we're in a situation now where we feel good about our personnel department. We have a system in place, and Chris is a very valuable asset to that system. And, you know, the next guy's got to step up, whoever that might be, and whether we you know, promote from within or we add a guy from the outside that knows our system that can come in right away and add. And that could potentially be a good thing for us too, because we can get another independent evaluation of our roster and our team to say, hey, you know what, you're really weak here. You're overlooking this deficiency in your team.
And I know that there are expected positions to be filled in Chicago and in Washington. Besides those two guys, how familiar are you with all the personnel guys around the league? And if you had to name two names of guys that would make excellent general managers, whether it be from your department or another team's department, who would they be?
Well, I think I can speak from our department, and I know, you know, Andy Dingler here has been scouting for a long period of time. He's assistant director of player personnel, does a really good job for us as both college and pro scouting. I think he's got a tremendous eye for talent and has very attention to detail. I think he would be a guy that that once we start to have success would garner some attention. The thing with the NFL, as we all know, it's a copycat league. So if the team's having success that year and they need a general manager, and same thing that happened with me. We were 13-3. I was in Atlanta, and well, we got to find out what Atlanta's doing. So I got 3 general manager jobs interviews, and so it kind of success breeds success, and that's. I think as we start to grow here and as we start to have success, we'll have some guys that will branch off and do it. Chris is getting a great opportunity because he's had great success. 14 years in Indianapolis, and you know they went to 2 Super Bowls, won one, and he's been in the playoffs at I think 13 or 14 times in his career. And so he knows what it takes, and he's got a good eye for talent. So those are the two guys that I can give you right now.
Okay, and with Chris going up there and the other openings around in the National Football League, is there maybe also opportunities with some of these departures that you could maybe get a valuable person that lost a job in this crazy business?
Yeah, absolutely. There's always a chance to upgrade. You look at, you know, some of the playoff games this past weekend, and you see some coaches on the sideline, people on the sidelines, and they're doing a great job, and you just realize that, you know what, those guys probably been fired half dozen times, times, and and it's a crazy business, and you know, Gus and I were just talking about it, and you know, a year ago there was one or two candidates that were, you know, the top candidates to be head coaching candidates, but their team had down years this year after 5 years of success. So now they're not head coaching candidates. So I don't understand how that works, but yeah, I guess they forgot how to coach in a year, right?
That's the way it is.
Yeah.
In the National Football League, we're going to take a break here on the Dave Caldwell Show, since Gus Bradley's got the night off from the radio show. And when we come back, we're going to start the awards here, because we got quite a few categories, and they're going to be the annual General Managers Awards for different categories of the Jaguars in 2014, and we'll do that right after this break on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
For season tickets, single game tickets, or to learn more about being a Jaguars 365 member, call 633-2000 or visit Jaguars.com. And back here on the Dave Caldwell Show, as we're calling it tonight, since Gus Bradley has got the night off. And now we'll kind of start some of the annual awards by the general manager. And after a 2014 season that was certainly challenging, 3-13, there are still awards that are certainly deserving. And let's start with two of them looking at staff. And let's start within your department, the personnel person of the year. And the reason I kind of created this category, because, you know, in order to be in personnel, you have to be a person of conviction. And you have to be able to speak your mind. And there are a lot of people in the room that may not share the same opinion that you have. But they still have to be able to have an opinion. If you had to name one guy on your staff, who would that be?
I would say it would be, to have that opinion would probably be Andy Dengler.
Okay.
But I'm not saying I'm going to give him the award, but he is the guy that would be the most opinionated.
Okay. Well, who's the personnel person of the year then?
Well, I'm going to give it to somebody else for a different reason. I'm going to give it to Tim Mingy.
Okay.
Who's our Southeast Area Scout. And the reason being is his ability to overcome adversity this year.
How so?
Got in a car accident. Had to have surgery on his neck, and did not miss a day of work.
Wow.
How about that?
Yeah, that's tough. That?
Been scouting for a long period of time and overcame a lot of adversity, and he's our personnel person of the year.
Personnel person of the year. All right, Tim Mingy. Assistant coach of the year. And the reason I named it the assistant coach of the year, because I didn't want to make it the coach of the year, and I didn't want, you know, obviously you're here on the Gus Bradley Show and say, well, Gus Bradley. Assistant coach of the year if you had to pick one.
That's a tough one.
Not if you have to. You
really,
have to.
Yeah, I guess I have to pick one. Coach Bradley should really pick it. But I'm just going to go purely off of production and what they did with the defensive line this year and the amount of sacks that we had, and I'd have to go Todd Wash.
And it went from 31 to 45.
Yes.
And obviously before the 31, it was even lower.
Yeah, and that's a position group where we really haven't invested a lot in terms of high-priced free agents or high draft picks. And for him to do it, you know, all those guys are good players, but they're maximizing their abilities, and he's doing a great job of putting them in position to succeed.
Todd Walsh, the winner of the first annual Dave Caldwell GM Awards, is Assistant Coach of the Year. All right, Leadership Award. And Leadership Award could go to a player. It could go to a staff member. It could go to anybody that is deserving.
We got to give that to Shad Khan.
Okay.
How about that?
That's too easy, Dave. Come on. Why?
Well, you know, just because you look around the league and you see how fortunate we are to have an owner like Shad Khan and his ability to take in the big picture and I don't want to say tune out the noise, but really understand what we're doing and communicate with us on a daily basis and be encouraging, have wisdom, but be challenging too at the same time. And, you know, Jacksonville has a great owner that they should be very proud of.
All right, Shad Khan, the winner of the Leadership Award. All right, the next category, the most improved player. And that could be improved within a year, or it could be from last year or this past year. From the previous year,
I'd have to say Denard Robinson. You know, okay. It's a pretty easy one right there.
And the biggest thing, obviously, from quarterback to OW, offensive weapon, to running back, but the biggest improvement from last year, I'm saying last year, from last year to this past year, was his ability to catch the ball.
Yeah, uncanny. Never seen anything like it before.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, and I know that he had supposed nerve damage, which is the reason why he went from quarterback to running back at Michigan. And I know he was talking to me at one point during the year, and he said it was even hard to even to clench his hand. But, I mean, you talk about dramatic.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, just think about that Indianapolis. I remember sitting at the Indianapolis game, and he made that one-handed catch out of the backfield. And I looked over to actually Tony Khan was sitting next to me. I'm like, a year ago, would you ever imagine Denard Robinson making a one-handed catch for us like that? And he did. He did a great job, and he you know, credit to him and getting better.
And plenty more to talk about with him, because tremendous development by him. But let's move on to the next category. Call this the Lunch Pail Award.
Got it.
And a hardest working guy.
Oh, I think it has to be Paul Posluszny.
I was going to say, yeah. Could it be anybody else?
It could be. We got a couple guys that are hard workers, but he's at a different level.
And a guy that obviously is going to be rehabilitating from a torn pec.
Yep.
And when you have a guy that's had that kind of injury but has that kind of work ethic, that has to make you feel good about next year for Paul.
Yeah, great. You know, we had a workout yesterday. We had a defensive lineman we worked out, free agent.
Can you pronounce his name?
No. Ike. And, you know, we walk out in the practice field to work him out, and there's Puzz doing sprints. So
Already,
yeah. I'm like, so.
Crazy.
Think he's dedicated?
He's crazy. All right, let's take a break here on the Dave Caldwell Show. When we come back, we'll finish up the annual GM Awards. We've got the Rookie of the Year, the Team MVP, and the Best Unrestricted Free Agent Acquisition by General Manager Dave Caldwell and his staff. And we'll do that right here on the Dave Caldwell Show right after this on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And tonight it's the Dave Caldwell Show, since the head coach Gus Bradley's got the night off, and we are right in the midst of giving out some awards. The personnel person of the year was Tim Mingy, was obviously given by Dave. And the assistant coach of the year, Todd Walsh, leadership award, Shad Khan. Hardest worker, the Lunch Pail Award, Paul Posluszny. And the most improved player, Denard Robinson. That remains, or we have remaining three categories. Best unrestricted free agent acquisition.
Good question. I'm going to have to say Chris Clemens.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Clemens.
Eight sacks.
Brought a really good element of leadership and toughness to our D-line. Played the run really well, which he probably doesn't get enough credit to do. And was a good addition. Yeah, played all 16 games and was productive and did a good job.
Who else would be in that conversation or close second?
Probably Red or Ziggy. You know, bringing Ziggy in and Red allowed us to have a rotation there to keep Sendarek and Roy fresh. And those guys really elevated their play this year because they weren't playing 60 snaps a game.
Boy, and it was really fun to watch, being a guy that played defensive line, to watch Ziggy Hood early on in training camp. You're like, yeah. And then all of a sudden, when he got to midseason, he kind of hit a stride.
Yeah, he was kind of like a rookie all over again. He had to unlearn everything he's learned over the last 4 years. Because if you remember, when he came out of Missouri, he was a very good scheme fit for what we do. He was an upfield penetrator. And when Pittsburgh drafted him, obviously they don't run that style of defense. So, you know, they used him as a two-gap and guy where he couldn't get upfield a whole lot. So he had to unlearn a lot of that stuff and really learn our system and learn our defense. And he came along pretty nice.
That's not easy to do.
No.
You know, after you kind of train your body and your mind to react a certain way with technique, credit to him, because yeah. I really had my doubts early on. The Rookie of the Year. And there are two guys that really jump out for me. And this week we're getting ready to do some packages on Jaguars.com, kind of breaking down the position groups. And Brandon Linder was one that I would probably said last week as being the Rookie of the Year. But then this week, watching the film of Telvin Smith and watching just what he possesses physically and how he finished down the stretch, it makes it a tough decision for me. How about for you?
It is a tough decision. And, you know, Telvin is, you know, incredible for what he's done this year, for a fifth-round draft pick to come in, and he's third in the league, I believe, in rookie tackles, and he only started 9 games, had 99 tackles, I think 2 sacks, interception, made numerous plays in pass defense, and was really good in coverage. And Brandon Linder was just steady at you from the day we got him. I mean, he can play center for us, although he didn't. He can play right tackle, although he didn't, and just stayed at guard and started 15 games, and you didn't even know he was there, which is a good thing, as you know, for offensive linemen.
They had one game that wasn't great. It was at Tennessee. Probably the game that our pops out in my mind is wasn't his best.
Yep.
But every other game other than that, your best offensive lineman all year.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. And so two pieces on each side of the ball we feel really good about. I think, you know, it's hard to not put Allen Hurns in that mix, even though he was not a draft pick, but have six touchdowns. He was our leading pass receiver in touchdowns and made some critical plays and made some big third down catches.
You get one.
I get one. I am going, and we can't forget about our quarterback.
No. Nope.
Quarterback usually gets the MVP, right?
Which and is the one category after and then, rookie of the year.
And then the other one I was thinking about who did not finish, though, but was Allen Robinson, who was leading all rookie receivers in receptions after eight games. And if you noticed, as our offense stalled a little bit after the bye week, our third down, you know, target wasn't there.
That's
and
right.
We kind of slowed down the last eight games. And, you know, the passing attack kind of slowed down, too. And it was kind of coincidental that those two things kind of happened.
Yeah, two catches that he had in London against the Dallas Cowboys were just incredibly strong hands. Yep. were great.
So I am going to have to go with, and because he was a later round draft pick, I will have to go with Telvin Smith.
Telvin Smith, rookie of the year, team MVP. There's one that jumps out at me.
Derek Marks.
Absolutely.
Yep.
I mean, a guy that just signed a contract extension. In a lot of cases, you know, kind of put the old coast mode on. And all he did was have a career best year, was a factor in the backfield, tackle for losses, had 8.5 sacks, tremendous player in all facets of the game.
Yep. Leadership.
Yeah.
Yep.
And his personality is just, he's a fun-loving guy, but serious.
Yeah, he's great. He's great. Guy you want to be around.
Is that him?
That's him? That's him.
Okay. Yep. Send Derek Marks. Team MVP.
I can't argue with that one.
Surgery has already happened with Send Derek Marks?
Nope.
When is that expected to happen?
I believe it's in a week or two.
Okay. In a week or two, Send Derek Marks will have ACL reconstruction. All right. When we come back, going to talk a little free agency with the general manager, Dave Caldwell, who's joining us tonight here on the Gus Bradley Show. Well, actually, the Dave Caldwell Show. So join us right after this break on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And tonight it's the Dave Caldwell Show. The general manager is joining us in place of the head coach, Gus Bradley. And Dave, free agency is going to get started up. Unrestricted free agency starts March 10th. That's also the date I believe the teams have to be under the salary cap. And the designation, is that right?
Yeah, we'll have no problems with that.
No, you won't have any problems with that. And March 2nd is also a key date because March 2nd is the last day in which teams can tag players, whether they be transition players or franchise players. And I'm sure you're anxiously awaiting that date to see who is actually going to be available.
Yeah, the thing with the free agent market is, you know, what you're looking at now won't necessarily be the market. You'll have an influx of players that get cut because of salary cap concerns, kind of like what happened with Red Bryant last year. You know, he got cut in about 4 days right before free agency started and enabled us to get a little bit of a head start and sign him. And then you'll have some players that you expect to hit the market that get re-signed, and depending on what the salary cap's going to be, some of these teams, if it's higher than what we expect, will have some room to maybe keep some players that they didn't think they'd be able to keep.
Do you guys kind of keep track of all of that salary cap situation to say, okay, well, this team here may have to trim a certain number of guys because of the salary cap concerns, so we better do our homework on these on this group of guys as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And Chris Poling and Tim Walsh combined do a really good job of that and looking at, you know, who are the teams that are really tight against salary cap. They have 39 players under contract right now, so they don't have 53, but they only have $7 million in salary cap room. Plus, you got to add in the next year's draft class, which could be another $5 million, so they really only have $2 million. And then you take into injured reserve credit, and it's, well, they don't really have any room, but it looks like they got $7 million. So there's a lot of things that go into it. And Chris and Tim Walsh will track that and kind of target the teams that we say, okay, if it's not the guys that are free agents, they're going to have to let somebody go, and we'll look at their rosters and see where they are, and then there's always a chance that they can restructure some deals too.
Do you have kind of a wish list already in place? And when I say wish list, I'm not talking about specific guys, but I'm talking about specific positions.
Yeah.
To where you say, okay, look, because, you know, the thing that would be at the forefront of my mind if I were in your shoes, it's like, okay, on offense, we're incredibly young. We really need to maybe add some experience on the offensive side of the ball versus the defense. Well, hey, look, let's address that in the draft because they're already young on that, or they're not as young on that side of the ball. Is that your thinking and thought process to building this roster?
Yeah, we'd like to really get to a point in time where we can get to into the draft day where we don't have to fill out a position to come in and start right away. And in the last 2 years, we've had that situation where we've had to draft a left tackle, he had to come and start right away, a safety had to come and start right away, a sixth-round safety, a seventh-round corner, and they were our starters. Same with this year, a sixth-round center, you know, fifth-round linebacker. These guys are coming in and being starters. That's not an ideal situation for us. We'd like to go into free agency and try to fill most of our needs so we can go into draft day and say, listen, we're going to take advantage of the number three spot, and we're going to take the best player available. And we're going to take a guy that, you know, even though we might have a good starter there right now, well, we're going to take a guy because we're building this for the future, and this guy's going to be a difference maker for 10 years.
How long do you expect it to take to get to that point that you're talking about where you're not worrying about filling positions?
Yeah, we're a lot closer, and I would say if not this year, next year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say we're close. You're always gonna, you know, you're always gonna want your first round pick to come in and start and play, at least a certain portion of the time. And then, you know, your second, third round picks, you'd like those guys to play at some point in time during the season because of attrition of injury or you know, you draft a guy in the second round, they're a third round, and they're your nickel corner, and then all of a sudden they develop into your starting corner or they're your third wide receiver, and then now, you know, six games into it, they're starting. And kind of bring them along that way instead of just going in their first game of the season. Allen Robinson, here you go. You've had six practices all year. You are starting X today.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Because of all the hamstring issues that he had, he missed all of training camp and most of the OTAs, and all of a sudden he's starting.
Yep.
Whoa. If you, without getting to specific names, because some players, the contracts obviously don't expire, so you're really not allowed to talk specifics. That would be considered tampering under league rules.
Never happens.
No, and it does, yeah, jokingly, I'm sure. But if you had to look at specific positions that you want to address in free agency, what are those positions?
Well, we're looking. I don't know if we necessarily need to discuss them today, but we're looking, and we have some that we're targeting.
You're saying that with a smile on your face.
Yeah.
So you're not willing to delve into that?
No, I don't think. I think it's too early for us to delve into that.
Okay, and with free agency, though, do you have a specific set of guidelines that you say, okay, these are the kind of players that we want? Numbers-wise, age-wise, do you have, like, requirements in that category?
Well, our first couple of years we did. We were, you know, our first year for sure, we were looking at, you know, players under 30. That were healthy, that would come in and contribute right away, to kind of be a bridge for us, that, you know, where we could do it and not have to, you know, play, you know, right away, some young guys. And then our second year going into it, we were a little bit more flexible with the age, and especially with guys that, you know, maybe our coaching staff coached before, like Chris Clemens and Red Bryant, and say, hey, these guys still have a couple good years in them, and let's take advantage of it because they're at a discounted price. And so now
that year three, does that change?
So
more?
Year three changes, yeah, because now we're looking at making a difference, and not only in our roster, but our record and across the board. So we'll be a lot more flexible. I think the thing that we're looking for is we want guys that have been durable, have been healthy, that have been accountable. And then really two things, they have to be cultural fits and they have to be productive. And if they're those two things, they're probably going to be a fit. If they're one of those two things, they better be really, really good at the one thing they're at.
Yeah. All right, well, let's take a break here on the Dave Caldwell Show. Here at Jaguars Radio Network. And we come back, Dave, want to talk a little draft with you and find out who you're going to draft with the third overall pick in the draft. You already got it in mind, right?
Yep.
Okay, we'll find out who Dave's going to draft with the Jaguars' third overall pick in the draft right after this on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Well, and it's not really the Gus Bradley Show. It's the general manager Dave Caldwell Show tonight. Dave sitting in for the head coach Gus Bradley tonight, who has the night off from radio responsibility, not the night off from coaching responsibility. Never ends trying to fill that offensive coordinator position. And with the draft approaching, Dave, April 30th, it's obviously a big event because it's multiple days. It's actually going to be held in Chicago this year for the first time. at what point are you in your evaluation of draft prospects?
Well, I've been catching up here this last week, but feel pretty good about it. And we're coaching the Senior Bowl, so I've been spending a lot of time trying to really dig into some of those guys that are going to be down there. So I have a pretty good idea of those guys that are going to be on our team and on the other team. So that's really what I'm doing now. And then, but pretty good.
If you had to say right now, who would you draft? Who would you draft? I had to ask. And with that third,
you know me,
overall,
I love telling everybody who we're going
to
draft.
With
right?
that third overall pick, you said that a first round pick, you expect to be a starter immediately. Linebacker, young Leo, defensive tackle. Obviously, with Senderek's injury, is that side of the ball more likely though than the offensive side of the ball?
Well, we did draft a quarterback with the third pick, and you want to always build around him too. So I wouldn't. I'd say right now that a lot of it depends on what happens before us. You know, who's there at the third pick, and you know if it's a difference maker as an offensive player. I'd not necessarily say we would shy away from that just to take a defensive player.
Okay. All
and right. I think Senderek, you know, talking to said he's ready and prepared to be ready in 9 months. So we'll see.
How many draft picks do you have this year?
Seven.
Seven picks.
Yeah.
So you got the full money.
Yeah. Last year we had nine, so it was a good year to have nine picks because it was a good draft. And this draft is, you know, I think it's shaping up to be a really good draft too. Really good draft.
The free agent period starts March 10th, but the trading period starts on March 19th. Is that an area that you'll look at?
We would consider it, yeah. Yeah, we'll exhaust every option, every possibility. If we can acquire more picks somehow, we would do that. If we can, acquire a player here or there that can come in and help us, we would do that too.
Okay, with your roster in this free agency period that begins March 10th, you've got some guys, Cecil Shorts, Alan Ball, and I'm assuming I'm right here, and I hope I got them all, but these are the guys that are UFAs, unrestricted free agents. Cecil, Alan Ball, Tyson Alualu, JT Thomas, and Geno Hayes. Did I hit there?
Yep, that's about right.
Would you like to have them all back?
We'd love to have them all back. Love to have them all back, but obviously not possible. And you know, those guys all gave us. You know, every one of those guys competed their tails off. Were complete pros, and I can't say enough good things about those guys. Unfortunately, in this business, it's you can't carry your whole team over from year to year, and you know, it'll be sad to see some of them go, but some of them hopefully we can retain.
Is there a priority on that list?
There's not. Right now, okay. You know, only Coach Bradley and I have kind of talked through some different scenarios, but we really have to get the defensive and offense staff's perspective and let them go through the season, and they're going to come back next week from their vacation and really start digging into – the whole season. And then at the end of it, you know, let's put their thoughts together and say, you know, where should we upgrade? Where should we, what players should we bring back?
Okay. All right. Let's take a break here on the Dave Caldwell Show. And when we come back, we're going to actually take a look at some of the playoff games coming up this weekend and get some thoughts from the general manager, Dave Caldwell, on these four playoff games right after this on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back to the Dave Caldwell Show. Last segment here and some games coming up this weekend, Dave, in the NFL playoffs. And let's get your thoughts on who you think might win. And we don't talk point spread. I don't do that. Ravens at the Patriots.
Ooh, that's going to be a physical one.
Baltimore 2-1 in the playoffs against the Patriots.
Can we come back to that one?
We'll come back to that one.
All right.
I'll give you an easy one. Panthers at the Seattle Seahawks.
I don't think it's as easy as people think.
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Panthers play good defense.
I think it might be 30 points.
Well, we'll see. We have to go with, the home team, right? Seattle Seahawks.
You're crazy if you don't. Cowboys at the Panthers. Interesting there. Packers.
Yep.
Well, Aaron Rodgers got a little calf thing going on.
I have to go with the home team again.
Okay, Packers.
That's my theme here.
All right, your former team, the Indianapolis Colts at the Denver Broncos, who was quarterbacked by – quarterback who used to work for the Colts.
Yeah,
your team.
Main reason why I'm here.
Yeah. Doesn't hurt, does
no.
it?
Let's go with the home team.
Okay, now let's go back to that first game, the Ravens at the Patriots.
Let's go with the home team.
You're going all home team.
All home team.
If you had to pick one game that you're not so sure about, is it that last one that you talked about, the Ravens at the Patriots?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Which team are you rooting for privately? Well, I guess it's not privately because I'm asking you here on radio.
I can't say that.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
All right, everybody. We got one more Gus Bradley show. We'll talk to everybody next week, same time, same place.